we're living in a democracy. At least they try to tell us that we are living in a democracy. But if you live in a democracy, we need a free speech, we need an open debate, we need all these kinds of things to find, let's say, a common ground with each other. Yeah. There is no common ground anymore. If you didn't follow the narrative, then you were cancelled. They do that with climate, they did it with COVID, and they do it with a lot of other things. Also on immigration, then you are a racist, etc. They call you names. And I think we have to go back to the basis and start listening to each other and also to the arguments and not only to the opinions.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of Unrestricted. I'm your host, Veronika Kirilenko. Today, I'm honored to speak with Rob Roos, a member of the European Parliament from the Netherlands and the vice chair of the European Conservatives and Reformists Group. Sir, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Mr. Roos, as a member of the Parliament's Committee on Industry, Research and Energy, you've been understandably laser-focused on these vital issues concerning the well-being of everyday people. Just yesterday, you held a panel debate and the movie screening on the importance of nuclear energy. Can you please tell us about this event, share some highlights, and talk about the impact that you were trying to make?
Yeah, here in Europe, we are busy with an energy transition, and it's different than in the United States. Here, it's really based on ideology. You have some problems in the United States also compared to the Biden administration compared to the Trump administration. But here in Europe, it's much worse. It's a kind of climate communism. Yeah, but it's really a problem because the energy prices are very high. We have problems with deindustrialization because our industry is not competitive anymore. People are suffering from high energy prices because they want to do the energy transition only with renewables. Let's say solar and wind. That's the most important thing. But it's just not possible to do that. It's physics, it's mathematics. If you look at the numbers, then you cannot do it. I'm not against phasing out a part of the fossil fuels, but then we have to replace that with nuclear energy. Yesterday, I had an event here in the European Parliament with Oliver Stone because he made the documentary Nuclear Now. And it was a great event because Oliver Stone is very in favor of nuclear energy. He is very afraid of climate change. Actually, I'm not that afraid. There is climate change, of course, but there is climate change for 4.5 billion years. And it's just something that we have to manage. But I'm very in favor of to reduce air pollution. And that's it. So that's also the advantage of nuclear energy. It's really affordable, it's steady, it's really reliable energy sources, and but it's also very clean. And that's why it's important that if we want to do this energy transition, that we install, let's say, reliable energy sources. And France did it 40 years ago, and that's the way to go. And but with Mr. Stone, it was amazing because he did a great job with his Nuclear Now documentary, and it's really attracting all the people that not aware of the situation.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It was reported earlier this month that the EU countries are split on the role of nuclear energy in the composition of the bloc's energy sector. 14 countries led by the France would like the atomic sector expanded, and 13 led by Germany and Austria. Yeah. Want the bloc to invest more, like you said, in renewable energy, and not notably your country, the Netherlands, supports the latter position. And can you comment on this divide and what's driving it?
Yeah, the left, and I mean the real left, I call that climate communism. That's what they want, degrowth. And nuclear energy is a real solution. And if you want prosperity, you need more energy. We see the energy demand is growing because the population is growing, and the fossil the fossil energy is very steady on 80-85%. And because of the energy demand is growing, the renewables are only on top of this energy demand. But it's not solving a problem. I'm not against fossil fuel. I think fossil fuel brought us a lot of prosperity, and because it's payable and it's affordable and reliable energy. But if we want to do the electrification, then the nuclear energy is really amazing. And so what we see is that the left governments in the member states are very against it, but we have fortunately also very realistic governments, and they embrace nuclear energy, and that is the fight here, what's going on in Brussels.
Yeah, let's talk about the broader efforts to implement climate change regulations and their meaning for Western economies and societies. You, sir, recently visited CPAC and the International Crisis Summit in Washington, D.C., where you gave a warning speech titled "Climate is the New COVID." So can you please elaborate on the reasons for drawing this comparison?
Yeah, during COVID, a lot of the fundamental rights of the people were taken away, and also the freedom was taken away of the people. We had the lockdowns, we had the mandates with the mask, and also the mandates with the vaccine. And I was very against that. And people call me an anti-vax, but that's not the case. I think it should be a choice. If you want to have the shot, then it must be possible. But if you don't want it, because I didn't do it because I was not in the risk group, then it should also be a choice. But this, we see the same with climate. There is no choice anymore. Everyone has to drive an electric car. We banned the combustion engine by 2035, and an electric car is much more expensive than let's say a traditional car. There should be a choice, because the combustion engine, that is 120 years of innovation. They are very, very clean, and these electric vehicles are not that clean if you look at the complete cycle of life, from raw materials till the waste that they produce. The batteries are really a problem in the future. So it's not clear that it's helping our environment, but the choice is taken away of the people. The freedom is taken away because an electric car is much more expensive. If you don't have a car, it's not about a car. It's about taking away the freedom to go wherever you want. So that's why I made the comparison. Climate change and COVID were both based on fear. Fearing people, and then giving a solution which was maybe horrible, giving everyone the shots, even the young children. But people embraced it because they said, oh, this is the only way out. So climate is the same. They depressing our young children because of fear, and then these young children and also adults, they embrace all these crazy solutions, which is not it's not making people's lives better. It's very complicated for people.
Interesting. What do you see as the remedy for people's irrational fears that are being weaponized against them?
Well, the narrative is very strong. All the critical voices were shut down, even I had a very difficult time. I spoke during COVID a lot of times about the human rights about the lockdowns. Small businesses were suffering, and I was defending the people. I was defending the small businesses, and of course we had to protect the vulnerable people, the narrative was pushed in a way that all the critical voices were shut down, even experts and specialists, etc. So there was no real debate anymore. And that is, well, we're living in a democracy. At least they try to tell us that we are living in a democracy. But if you live in a democracy, we need a free speech, we need an open debate, we need all these kinds of things to find, let's say, a common ground with each other. But there was no common ground anymore. If you didn't follow the narrative, then you were cancelled. They do that with climate, they did it with COVID, and they do it with a lot of other things. Also in immigration, then you are a racist, etc. They call you names. And I think we have to go back to the basis and start listening to each other and also to the arguments and not only to the opinions.
Remember when the only uncertainty in news was the weather forecast? Now, our world is clouded by half-truths, misdirection, and gaslighting. The deluge of lies from leftist activists posing as journalists is unrelenting. At The New American, we hold fast to the timeless truths of our founders. Sanctuary in the storm. Visit thenewamerican.com today and get 25% off your subscription.
Yeah, but they are not interested in listening to you, are they? Like you said, they are shutting down the debate. They are against free speech. They are actually trying to destroy these democratic institutions that are actually left in the West. But I'd like to ask you something about the people's attitudes toward climate change. Last July, the EU published a poll that found that more than three quarters of the EU citizens, actually 77% of them, think that climate change is a very serious problem at this moment. And a majority of Europeans think that national governments, businesses, and industry are responsible for tackling climate change. And another survey posted this past October by the European Investment Bank found that 66% of Europeans support climate change reparations to developing countries, and over 70% wouldn't mind paying additional environment-related taxes. How do you interpret these results? Is it because the debate is shut down and people cannot access any second opinions, any alternative information out there? What's happening?
These are very high numbers, but it depends on how you ask the question.
True.
Because we did also a poll, and we asked the people, how much money do you want to spend to fight climate change? And the people in the Netherlands said, 10 euros max per month. It's nothing, 10 euros max per month. And so, but if you ask also the question, what is the biggest problem that we face in our society, then we see complete other results. Climate change is on number 8 or number 10 or something like that. It's not on the top priority of people. But I think this poll was made by the European Commission itself. And the question was made in a way that they had the answer that they wanted.
Sure. Okay, but you said so climate change is not a top priority for Europeans, but what are top priorities? Because I know that you guys will be holding elections in July, in June, right? Beginning of June.
We have almost the same problem as the United States with mass immigration, illegal immigration, people coming to Europe with such big numbers that the member states, we cannot handle this anymore. And this is what people, it's changing our culture, but it's also putting it's very difficult because it's very difficult for our health system, for our education system. Our children don't have houses anymore. They live with their parents till 30 years of age, sometimes older. They cannot raise families. We have all kinds of other problems. And I think illegal immigration is really the problem. Affordable energy is also something that is very important for people, also for small businesses and even big businesses, because we see now the deindustrialization going on in Germany and also in the Netherlands. we have much bigger problems than climate change. And if climate change is a problem, then nuclear is the solution. But they don't want that. They want renewables. And you cannot solve the problem with renewables. So yeah, it's.
Well, you mentioned the industrialization of the European countries, and you mentioned the climate communism, which you said. And I understand that such economic sectors of the economy as energy, transportation, industry, agriculture, and building are the most targeted by the various climate regulations. What kind of changes have they undergone since the EU decided it needs to save the planet by polluting less?
Yeah, they need also to save the planets by burning complete forests, because biomass is also a renewable energy. It's crazy. No, the attack on the farmers, of course. It started in the Netherlands. We are the second largest food producer in the world. Very tiny country, 19 times smaller than Texas, but after the United States, the second largest food producer in the world. But now we see that they are also attacking all the farmers in the other parts of Europe. So we have big farmer protests, because food is a matter of national security, and the farmers, they are also a part of our culture. We should not be dependent on other parts of the world to have food on our plates every day. That's one thing. The buildings, of course, the energy that you don't have to burn is always better than. So if you can save energy, it's good. But making a very old building completely to the latest standards of let's say of the last decade, it costs so much money. It's economic disaster. You cannot do that. And of course you can do something, but you have to be realistic. It has to be economic responsible to invest your money. The cars, of course, transport. Now they want this. I believe that they also have a discussion in the United States. They even want to have our army be electrified. You know, the it's crazy. If you want an electric car, you should have that choice. But you cannot replace everything. And even the big trucks. For me, it's just impossible to do. Again, embrace nuclear. You can make hydrogen, and from there you can make clean fossil fuel. You can solve the problem for the heavy trucks, etc. But the way we are doing it now, it's really not possible, and it's making people's lives very difficult and also very expensive.
Yes, of course. It sounds like neither businesses nor everyday people are benefiting from these changes. Can you speak about the beneficiaries of climate change policies?
Well, climate change, well, that's a difficult question. Are there beneficiaries? No, I think for the last 40 years, maybe 50 years, we in the West did an incredible job to improve our environment. We did already a wonderful job, and I'm sure we are not there. We can still improve, but we should do it in a way that it is economic, in an economic way responsible. And I cannot see any advantages of this climate change policy. It's even worse. Climate policy is very bad for the environment. It's something different, but they always say, no, we need a clean climate. They mixed up all the things. It's climate change. It's about reducing CO2 levels. Now, you can do that with nuclear energy, but if you are installing all these wind turbines in our nature, in our offshore. It's very bad for biodiversity. So, no, I don't see the real advantages. I think we as Europe should be energy independent. We can use. I have solar panels also on my roofs, but we cannot energize our industry with that. That's impossible.
You also mentioned some real left in Europe and some, like you said, again, I really love this expression, climate change communists. Who are they? Can you identify them and name the names?
Yeah, we have the Greens, of course. The Greens, but it's beautiful. Huh? It's marketing. They call themselves the Greens, but they are the communists. They are the former communists. But it's marketing. Yeah. They wrapped it up in a beautiful climate package. And we have the left. They are even also they're also Marxist, because this is what it is. It is Marxism. And we have the example of the watermelon. It's green from the outside, but it's red from the inside. But also the socialists. They may be less worse, but we have the East European countries. They are very in favor of. Let's say realistic policies, but the Greens, the left, the socialists, but even the liberals, they adopted all this green policy, and also you should not expect that. But the Christian Democrats, they should in an ideological way. Very close to us as conservatives, but they moved along with all these green policies and even the LGBTQI agenda, everything. So as long as they stay in power, I hope we have elections in June. I hope that we can change this parliament and have some more realistic policy. And that let's say the Euro skeptic people also go out to vote, because that's the problem. The pro EU people, they go out to vote, but the Eurocritical people, they are not interested in a European Union. They stay at home, and that's why we have this completely left liberal parliament.
Yeah. Very interesting. Sorry, to get back to you, the topic of your speech in Washington, D.C., I'd like to ask you this. Well, COVID policies that concern travel and economic restrictions inspired environmentalists across the globe, as they saw how lockdowns resulted in emission reductions within months after they were implemented. So this is when the idea of climate lockdown started to be discussed in the media and even academia. Do you see any preparations or precursors for future climate lockdowns?
Yeah, they are. There are preparations. 2-3 weeks ago, the digital identity was adopted here in the parliament. And they are now very busy with the central bank digital currency. If you put those two together, you can control people's lives. And also to create the CO2, the carbon budget. And you can control people with this carbon budget. So the preparation is really going on. We are almost there. And this is what I call Chinification. This is also what they do in China. And you have a carbon budget when you want to buy a piece of meat, but your wallet says, "Oh, Mr. Rose, you were on an airplane last week. This month there is no meat possible for you anymore." This is the near future. This is what's going to happen if we let this climate communist. Can go along.
Gee, this sounds so dystopian, but there is a widespread belief in conservative circles that the globalist forces and their lackeys in the national governments have overplayed their hands. And COVID restrictions and mandates were just way, way too harsh And we know now that the risks of the virus were minuscule for most of the population. And we know that the climate change right now is not driven by man. It's like you said, it's a natural phenomenon. So therefore, a majority of the people would not comply should governments declare another emergency, be it Disease X or climate lockdowns or anything else. Do you share this optimistic perspective?
Yes, we see change also here in Europe. We have a lot of governments now who are conservatives. People don't accept it anymore. But I'm also concerned because they are also preparing. No, this is already done. Free speech is they take free speech away from people. We have the Digital Service Act, and that is fighting disinformation. Disinformation that was used to fight foreign interference, especially during the elections. But now disinformation is to fight the own citizens who have an unwilling opinion. And this is really censorship. So people should not accept, but if all the people who do not accept and speak out are shut down, then the narrative of climate change is a real disaster, COVID is a real disaster. This is the only thing that will be heard in the media and on the social media and online, etc. So yeah, we have to speak out as much as possible and fight against this censorship.
Yes, I would like to thank you so much for your time today, sir. Would you please tell us what's the best way to follow you and your work?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter, on Instagram, and also on YouTube. Rob, if you Google me, Rob Roos at European Parliament, then you will find me. And I think we on both sides of the Atlantic, we should fight together. We, together with the Republicans, I hope Donald Trump will be elected. I am very in favor of him. Not everything, but he is really fighting the system, and the system is very strong. So we need all the forces to be united and let's work together to take back our freedom and to give a better world to our children, where freedom is something normal.
Amen to that. That was Rob Roos, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronika Kirilenko of The New American Magazine.
YouTube had a few words when they canceled us. We had a few words for them. No more. Do more. Subscribe today and get 25% off your first year. TheNewAmerican.com.